Dysfunction at work takes on many forms. That's one reason steering clear of it is so difficult. But Jennifer Wilson of Convergence Coaching has advice for dealing with dysfunction on this episode of the Journal of Accountancy podcast. I'm Neil Amato, a senior editor with the J of A. Our conversation was recorded at AICPA Engage in June, and you'll hear it right after this message from our sponsor.
Running a business is rarely simple, but earning rewards can be. With the Chase Inc. Business Unlimited card, earn unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase for whatever your business needs. Restrictions and limitations apply. Offer subject to change. Cards are issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank and a member FDIC.
Jennifer, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks, Neil. I'm glad to be here.
Today we're going to talk on the topic of dysfunction at work is a really simple way of putting it. So first, how would you define dysfunction at work?
Well, dysfunction is anything that's not really working well, but more detailed definition would be behavior that's outside of the expected behavior or the documented behavior. So if we have a code of conduct, it's dysfunction is behavior that's not endorsed by our code of conduct, behavior that's outside our core values, behavior that's outside of our operating agreement, behavior that's outside of the professional norms. Dysfunction is when an individual or a group of individuals is behaving in a way that causes the firm's systems or processes or people to break down.
On dealing with dysfunctional people at work, you wrote a popular article in February 2017 for CPA Insider. More than 2 years later, that's still a great topic. I mean, that's probably bad news overall, but to be able to talk about it, maybe it's good. But is this issue ever going to go away?
You know, Neil, I wish it would. You know, I don't know. Maybe we need to. It's a John Lennon song or something. I wish we could call everybody to the ideal of being perfect and behaving exactly as they should or as expected. But the truth is that there are people who are selfish. There are people who are cliquish. There are people who are out for themselves and not for the greater good. And that accidentally finds its way into the workplace, and I don't think it'll ever go away. I think we can shorten the cycle with which we cause it to leave our workplace, and that's always what I'm trying to do, is to get firm leaders to be responsible for that. We may not eliminate dysfunction on the whole across all work environments, but we can sure make sure we root it out quickly when it's at our place.
Have people gotten any better about speaking about dysfunction at work in, you know, maybe the two and a half years since you wrote the article?
Well, I mean, there's, first of all, I would tell you that I think that next generation talent have a lower tolerance for it. I think they have been raised with a higher social expectation of better behavior. And I think that they also have a strong sense of fairness. And they are more vocal and less willing to put up with it. And so I think there are more movements, like the Me Too movement, but other movements where, you know, future leaders, if you will, stand up against the establishment and say, this is not fair, this is not right. We have a counterculture movement happening. That's what next generation talent and clients are causing in the profession. It's counterculture, just like in the 1960s, late 60s and early 70s. And I think that dysfunction in work at work is going to be talked about more.
In an organization, who should take ownership of addressing dysfunction or take steps to get rid of it?
You know, fantasy land is top-down only. You know, the top leaders at the top of the pinnacle are supposed to root out dysfunction in their organizations and not tolerate it. Sadly, top leaders often have some dysfunction within them. And maybe they're causing the dysfunction of the organization. So, you know, if an organization or a firm has dysfunction, the senior leadership should be held responsible for that. But if I have dysfunction in my work life, I have to take responsibility as an individual for attempting to solve that problem. I can't hope senior leadership just notices it and handles it.
You mentioned earlier that there are plenty of cases where people just aren't speaking up enough. Why are they scared?
Well, a lot of reasons, but you know, I'll start with retribution as probably the biggest reason, and that's people are afraid that if I speak up, that somehow that will blow back on me, that the person I spoke up about will hear about it. I'll either get confronted by them or I will be penalized in some way. You know, so if it was my boss who is not following company protocol on our expected methodologies and procedures for service delivery, and they have asked me to modify that, and I tell someone else, you know, because I want that changed, it's possible my boss in my next review could penalize me, that retribution fear. So that's one. I think people are afraid they'll be wrong. You know, maybe I'm misjudging it. I think there's a denial is pretty powerful. And so we do kind of sit with a healthy sense of denial at first when we see bad behavior or when we experience dysfunction. We might say, gosh, maybe that's an isolated incident. Maybe I misinterpreted it. We give lots of tries to the person or to the group that we feel dysfunction from, just hoping we're wrong. So I think sometimes silence is just like a waiting period where I'm hoping it'll never happen again.
What are steps that finance professionals or really any professionals can take to get started removing potentially remove dysfunction at work?
Well, the very first thing you have to do is sort of admit that it's happening to yourself. So face it and then say, if I address this, what am I afraid will happen? You know, I would call this facing the dysfunction and facing your fear of the dysfunction. So I'm afraid that if I address this, what will happen? And usually the most severe thing that could happen is I could get fired. If you're a great performer in an organization and you're considered a solid contributor, getting fired is a possibility, but it's not that likely, I tell people. I maybe it'll happen, but it seems like maybe an irrational fear if you raise the issue appropriately. So what else are you afraid of? I'm afraid of looking bad. I'm afraid of hurting someone's feelings. I'm afraid of the conflict itself and having to maybe defend my position. You know, so I like to have people kind of explain to themselves, what am I afraid of? And write down those fears, because a lot of them are things that you could sort of say, is this fear big enough for me to just sit silent and let this persist in my life?
What's the role of documentation, of writing down the experiences, and what are the do's and don'ts regarding that writing down?
Well, I like to have people write down, not just, you know, hey, this is happening and here are my fears about it. And I want them to write down exactly what they're experiencing. And I want them to try to do it. And I give them a framework where I say, write down what's happened as factually as you can without a bunch of dramatic words. You know, so, my boss raised her voice at me on Thursday, the 8th of June, you know, or whatever. But not, you know, my boss tore me a new one and humiliated me in front of everyone. You know, that's the drama stuff. And you try to, maybe you write it down dramatically at first, but then clean it up, you know, into a factual Spock-like statement, you know. And then you look at that against what you expected to have happen. And I like to have people sort of say, here's the dysfunction that happened to me, and here's what I expected. So it could be my boss raised their voice at me in a meeting, but I would expect that wouldn't happen because of our core value of respect. And I want people to think about, you know, what's happening dysfunctionally and then what is supposed to be happening and why do we think it's supposed to be happening. Sometimes it's a professional norm, like, a professional courtesy is, your client called me and I called them back and they would like me to serve them and I didn't tell you. you know. So then I'm upset, you know, the person who lost the client to me is upset because I, you know, what do you mean? The client called you and they'd rather work with you and you went ahead and said okay and you didn't even tell me. That's awkward, you know. And so you can either, I just want you to write that down. When the client called you, you should have talked to me. And maybe it isn't written in our handbook. I can't point to that, but it's a professional courtesy. So I like to have people think, what happened? And then why would I expect different? And that helps us sort of put it in the framework of a way of addressing it then. Then we can start thinking about talking about it to somebody. Before we move to another question, I want to touch on something, and that is one mistake we make with dysfunction is that we experience it and we tell other people.
So are you saying that we shouldn't tell other people?
I don't want you to tell other people right away. Unless it's like unbelievable, like you were the victim of sexual harassment at right this minute and you feel violated and need to get up and go tell HR. Of course I want you to tell somebody else then. What I mean by don't tell other people is I am upset with my boss for the way that she managed that assignment. And instead of telling her or discussing it at all with authorities, I go and tell you, my coworker, and complain about her. And you and I commiserate or triangulate about her. And, you know, I tell you all the stuff about her that bugs me and the way she does work assignments and scheduling and blah, blah, blah. And all I really do when I do that is I bring myself down further and I get really entrenched and righteous about how wrong she is. And I kind of gross you out, too. I make you either gross out on the boss or I make you, you know, gross out on me for complaining. And it's not good for morale when an organization has that. That's another form of dysfunction, by the way, being upset with someone else but complaining to a third party. And when we have a lot of that happening in an organization, the big mistake is nothing gets fixed. If I complain to you about something someone else did, they're very unlikely to change it because they don't even know I'm upset about it.
I said I was going to come back to the idea of people maybe doubting what they're experiencing is really right. So I thought that maybe one way to test if that was right was to talk to someone. But you're basically saying within limits, you kind of need to wait and work it out in your own head first.
For sure. And I think that a lot of times when I want to complain to you instead of go to the person that I feel I'm having the dysfunctional relationship with, when I want to complain to you, I'll say things like, well, I just want to use Neil as a sounding board. You know, I'm just going to bounce this off you, Neil. And that might be valid if I really am doing that. But most of the time, what I'm really doing is complaining to you. And there's a massive difference. And it's dangerous to use you as a sounding board for me to test whether so-and-so did something wrong. Because all I'm really doing is then sort of gossiping about that situation. And I can damage so-and-so's image in your mind by bouncing the idea off you. Instead, I have to sort of document what I'm experiencing against what I expected, and then I need to think about addressing it with either the person that I have the dysfunctional situation with directly, or if that feels just too scary and too contentious, I have to go to somebody in authority.
So can that designated sounding board person, can they almost be an enabler if they just continue to listen and don't really advocate for the person or give that person advice and just sit there and listen? Like, just seems like the problem doesn't go away.
Well, for sure. And it's interesting because the third prong in that, the complaining recipient, if you will, they're very rarely just a listener. They get in there and say, yeah, and one time when I did it with her, she was, you know, and they get right in there too. So all that does is create a spiral of negativity between you two. If they just sit there and empathetically listen and then let the complainer leave and no resolution occurs, they might feel like, well, people come to me and they vent on me. That's what they might say. A lot of people vent to me. And all that tells me is, wow, you are an open, willing person to listen to people's complaints that aren't getting solved. If people came and register complaints and you go take action with their permission, that's a totally different scenario. But just listening to people's complaints is a form of enabling, and it's also kind of a form of dragging yourself down.
Tell me more about dragging yourself down.
Well, so I like to say that that if you're complaining to others, and complaining about something persistent, like complaining about, you know, we have too much work and not enough people, or our boss doesn't, you know, care about us, or I don't know, you know, whatever your persistent complaint might be, if you complain the same complaint with somebody, you know, that somebody is probably like your best friend to go to lunch with or your margarita buddy or something, because you sit together and you complain. And that is one of the most interesting dynamics in our businesses and firms today, is this idea that we persistently complain to one another instead of solving the dysfunction in front of us.
So really that listener, if it's a true person A is complaining about boss B to somewhat neutral observer C, if that neutral observer C is the, okay, the way I'm hearing this is you are frustrated because of X, I believe you need to talk to boss B about it. You have to approach them directly. I mean, that would be an example of a good listener, right?
I think so. And also sometimes that listener would be, if you don't feel you can talk to boss B, how about I talk to boss B? Or how about you and I talk to boss B together about it? So yes, that's a healthy form of discussing the dysfunction. But I just wanted to point out that all too often, not only do we not address dysfunction and we stay silent, we don't necessarily stay silent. We complain to somebody who can't affect it. And we really, that's the start of toxic culture, the macro problem.
You mentioned the HR example. I mean, if there's a true danger issue or a sexual harassment issue and you feel the need to immediately go to HR, that's one thing. But when do you know it's time to leave a dysfunctional work situation? What steps do you have to take before you get to that point?
Ideally, you have to address the dysfunction with somebody who could affect it. And you have to do so somewhat dispassionately, if possible, very factually. And you need to make a request for a change and give the person in authority the opportunity to make that change. And I don't know how long you give them. It depends on the circumstances and what the change is. But you register that request for change and maybe write a written recap to that person that says, thanks for talking to me today about my current scheduling dilemma and your commitment to make changes in the following ways. And we document what our understanding is and what our request is. And we put it in writing and hope the person in authority will change it. If they don't change it, then we have a decision to make. And the decision is, can I accept my current circumstances and stop complaining about them and work here functionally? Or should I leave here because this organization is not committed to make the changes that I feel need to be made for my work life to work out? And I think if you never give the organization a chance to make the change, and a lot of people leave. I wrote a blog for CPA Insider about please tell us before you leave. You know, don't go out and look for a job till you tell us why. We might be able to change it. You know, so I feel so sad that people don't try to get change made before they quit. But sometimes if you're just so demoralized and hurt and you feel like your health is being eroded and you just really don't feel good about your circumstances, you might, if you're too afraid to go tell anybody, if it starts to affect your health or your relationships with others, get out of there. You know, you get out of there.
What about someone who is approaching a job? Is there anything they can find out kind of in the interview process? Anything they can ask about, look for signs for of a place that might be toxic, but they don't know it?
Oh, for sure. First, you know, just Google, look at the Vault ratings, look at Glassdoor, talk to people that you know that have worked there, go to LinkedIn and look at connections that have worked at that organization and ask them. So do, you know, what you might call background checks, but also in the interview process, just ask the people that you're working with, what do you like most about the job and why? What do you like least about the job and why? You could say, what adjectives would you use to describe the culture here? You know, if they use things like, it's a good place to work, and they don't have a lot of really positive, descriptive adjectives, that might be a signal that they're struggling to describe something special. And, you know, they might use words also like, it's challenging, it can be difficult at times, things like that. Those might be clues that you should be having some red flags or flares go off about what it might be like to work there.
Jen, thank you so much for being on the podcast. This was a lot of fun today.
Thanks, Neil. I'm really grateful to have been asked.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.